Now, guest now, Mariam Master, a writer with more than 20 years experience writing for the stage and screen. She started her career on Australia's biggest soap opera, Home and Away, writing over 80 episodes before finding her niche writing television for children. She has credits for kids' TV shows like Blinky Bill, Sesame Street's Elmo and Ollie, and Jim Henson's Bambaloo, among many more. More recently, she's taken to adapting David Williams' smash hit books for the stage, Mr. Stink, Billionaire Boy and The Midnight Gang, all premiered at the Sydney Opera House and have toured across Australia. And now Mariam's taking that wealth of experience to writing her own book, Exit Through the Gift Shop. It tells the story of 12-year-old Anna, who is dying of cancer and also managing a school bully. But it's not a story of doom and gloom. The book is full of friendship, fun and Mariam's quirky humour. Mariam Master is with us from Sydney. Kia ora and welcome.
Thank you, Catherine. So good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Unfortunately, I know you're probably in the house again with that with lockdown. How are you travelling? As a writer, can you say, hey, look, this is just like another day writing away, or is it pretty stressful, Mariam?
Oh, look, the kids are at home, so I've been kicked out of my own office. You know, there's homeschooling going on, so I am sitting in my bedroom, on my bed. This is where I work now.
The Wi-Fi's run out and lunch is due. Oh,
exactly.
Great. How old are these kids of yours now who I'm sure inspire so much?
12 and 16.
And is one of them called Ollie, by the way?
Yes. You saw the...
I saw the dedication, but of course I'm thinking back to Elmo and Ollie. Is that just coincidence?
That's absolute coincidence. Yes. So Ollie, who's a Sesame Street character, existed long before my Ollie. So it was a fortuitous thing to have my Ollie come along to the shoot of that little skit that I wrote.
Yeah.
And feel very much at home.
There's been who's our other friend there? I can hear the dog's been locked out too. Who's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's actually the neighbor's dog. Oh. The joys of, recording from home. Sorry.
let's talk about the first novel. There's so much to discuss from a very broad career, but this is the first novel. And tell me, it's the experience of writing it, and then we'll talk more about the subject matter. But for you, as a having had such a versatile writing career, was this more of a challenge in many ways?
Actually, no. In a way, it gave me so much more freedom, because when you write for television, when you write for the theatre, you have to be creative within constraints. You have to, I always say it's like being creative in a straitjacket. For television, you are given your premise, you have your characters, you have to write, those voices that are already created. And within that, you have to, bring your own flair to it. Theatre is the same. You're adapting somebody else's work. You have other constraints, like, you have an hour in which to tell a story that could take much longer. You have to cut characters. You have to double up characters. You have to, allow for laughter and applause and all of those things you have to keep in mind. So in a way, writing my own book was just so liberating. It was so freeing because I could just do whatever I wanted.
Introduce us, please. Is it Anna or Anna? I'm thinking in Australia it's possibly Anna, but please introduce us to
Anna,
your protagonist.
Yeah. Well, her full name is Anahita. Well, Anahita Rosalind Orban Galiche, but yes, Anna is what we call her.
And here's the thing. She, and right on the first page, she tells us she is dying of cancer. And we're to meet a very special girl and go through a remarkable journey into her character and who she is. But the sort of genesis, if you like, of her in your story is what?
Look, I wanted to tell the story. I wanted to talk about big ideas with little people. I have a 5-year-old who... I have a 12-year-old who from the age of 5 was asking these big questions. What happens when we die? What is the point of it all? Really big questions for a little person. And I always thought, I've got to go there. I've got to go there with my own work one day. So really, she's there to show us that, you know, these things happen, that there are big things that happen in life, but also that more important than anything else is to sort of have a laugh as you go along and to have hope and to have that sense of humor and, you know, to enjoy life and to embrace life no matter what it throws at you. So that's really what I was trying to do with this book.
Children, and certainly young people, we can't protect them from these realities. In fact, as you say, they often confront us with what they're thinking about. And yes, this is a way of going where some of them will undoubtedly go, where many of them will undoubtedly go in their thinking and their questions, and perhaps even in their experience or the experience of schoolmates.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, death is a part of life, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, some people have said to me, oh, it's so taboo. How could you go there in a children's book? How did you find the courage? And for me, it wasn't, it's just not taboo, you know. It's, for me, it's a part of life. And I think it never occurred to me that I was doing something controversial, you know, because of course we all think about that. We all do. We always have, you know. What is next? Where do we go? Where do people who die go? And everybody knows somebody who has passed away at, you know, at some stage in their lives. So why not? Why not sort of go there with humour?
Isn't it curiosity you've always had yourself? And curiosity is an interesting word. Curiosity is different from, you know, kind of a burden or, a, you know, a fear.
Yeah, absolutely, Catherine. I've been obsessed. Again, I always say, you know, I'm not obsessed with it in a kind of an emo, dark, depressing kind of a way, but really that curiosity of what's on the other side, you know, why are we even here? What is the point of it all? You know, I used to, years ago, you know, going back 20 years, you know, I used to read near-death experiences, you know, people who'd kind of died for a short amount of time, come back, you know, and it's fascinating actually to read about, to read those experiences because they're very similar. And so, yes, it is a particular obsession of mine. But, I mean, this book isn't, you know, as you know, it's not really focusing on that so much. It's actually more about the life that she's living right now
and wisdom,
and how to embrace those everyday things, you know.
And her wisdom. The exit through the gift shop is a bit of a hint as well. It comes from one part of the book and a comment that she makes.
Yes, about, well, it's a metaphor for life, really, yeah, isn't it? That, you know, you're forced to look at the gifts as you are on your way out.
And you're forced to look at gifts that you would ordinarily bypass. Another theme here, and again, this is another theme that children will go straight to and will often confront much more directly than adults will, is bullying. And explain a little more about our nemesis here.
Well, I'll tell you a little something, Catherine. She's not entirely fictional. you know, I, like many people, I'm sure, have experienced, you know, been on the receiving end or possibly, you know, been the bully. But, you know, it happens. It's a thing. And I wish it ended, you know, with my generation, but it doesn't. So, again, you know, I thought it was important to bring that element into it and to have her navigate her way.
Alyssa Queen Mean Anderson. Queen Mean, I love it. The queen bees of school. Yeah.
Yes.
And so when you drew on your own experience and also obviously of others' experience of this, what is it that you wanted to bring out in this theme in the book? If I can lead you a little bit, one that strikes is shame. And we don't often think of it about that. We think of the attack on someone's self-esteem, but the shame comes through here. And could you speak a little bit more to that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's interesting you picked that up. You know, I never told my parents about the fact that I was bullied at school. And in fact, my almost 8-year-old dad read the book fairly recently. I was quite disturbed, you know, and he asked me, is this based on something that happened to you? Was it, you know, so we had this conversation 30 something years later, you know, and it's not, you know, it's not a deep sense of shame, but it is shame. And it is I guess like any kind of abuse that happens, you know, you kind of feel that it shouldn't be happening to me. There must be something wrong with me that it's happening to me. I'll just bury it somewhere and deal with it, you know. And I think I wanted to address that in the book too. And I wanted kids who are reading this, who are perhaps experiencing something similar, feel that they're not alone, and that it's okay. It's okay to speak up. It's also okay not to speak up because, you know, that's just the nature of it.
I mean, you touch on it quite directly in a couple of parts in the book, but in one part, Persian versus Iranian. I tell people I'm half Persian instead of half Iranian, even though technically speaking Iranian's more correct. I think there's a reference a little later in the page. It just, you know, sounds better. I mean, this is brutal stuff. And in migrant nations like ours, and particularly in Australia, this is the experience of a lot of children. And they've got to find their way to navigate it. They shouldn't have to. And also the impacts can be and are lasting, yeah?
Absolutely. And look, some of the ugliest things that I faced was racism, which isn't in the book. I didn't want to bring that in. But it's very real, you know. And yes, they shouldn't have to. So, you know, I guess what I'm this book is sounding really depressing.
No, it's not.
I'm trying. I tried to flip it all on its head, all the adversities, all the difficulties, all the challenges that are thrown at Anna, a 12-year-old Anna, to have her kind of hit them back, you know, to kind of, there she is with the bat and she's just, you know, everything that is thrown at her, she's hitting it back with joy and with positivity, which is, you know, I hope you got that from the book.
Of course, and with humour as well.
With humour, you've got to laugh your way through life. You know, there's just no other way.
It's aimed for young adults. I think the publisher calls it 8 to 14, but have you had feedback from people quite a bit older saying this is for anyone?
Yes, I have. Most definitely. Yeah, I think sort of, it would be safe to say 8+, because it is about all of those big things. You know, of course, there's some toilet humor in there and silly kid stuff. But, you know, I tried to appeal. Really, I was thinking of my two sons. I've got, you know, like I said, a 12 and a 16-year-old who are not, you know, the world's greatest readers, but I just kept thinking of them. I kept thinking, are they still reading? Are they turning the page? Are they still with me? So that's sort of who I had in mind. But I think as it turned out, you know, like I said, even my dad at 80 thought this was a book that was for him.
The David Williams experience and influence is everywhere, as well as understanding what children and young people will read, because there's wonderful illustrations all the way through this of all kinds, and there's little breakout points describing what words mean or what a metaphor is. There's a huge revenge across a couple of pages in capital letters.
Yes, that's all the brilliant work of Astrid Hicks.
Yeah.
My illustrator, she's fantastic.
And this matters, I mean, his restorative justice we're talking about here, another thematic part here. This matters because this generation of readers coming through, yes, they want words, but they're very used to visual stimulus, yeah?
Yes. Yes. Again, that was part of what I wanted for the book, because I was, you know, I kept thinking of my boys, you know, when they pick up a book and it is words from beginning to end, they just go, it's too long, Mum, it's too hard, can't read that. But I think anything that is visual, really helps young readers to pick up a book and feel empowered that they can do this.
They love that breakout theme as well, you know, the little picture boxes or, you know, as I said, metaphor, what does it mean? They bring a variety of senses to how they read and how they experience. Marion Masters.
Give your brain a break.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. Exactly. Yeah. Marion Masters, our guest. Her book is Exit Through the Gift Shop, which is illustrated by Astrid Hicks. It's 10:30 on 9 to noon on RNZ National. What a versatile career you've had. And where did it begin? I think you went to uni and studied, you know, film, TV, writing, that kind of thing. Where was the first break?
Look, I made a film at uni, actually, that did the festival rounds and it won a bunch of awards. So in a way, that was it. You know, once I won those awards, I kind of thought, okay, well, maybe I could do something with this. And I applied for a job at Channel 7 as an assistant scriptwriter on Home and Away. And the rest is kind of history.
You seriously, there's a job in the paper with that with that title.
It was the first time they'd ever done that, because usually these kind of jobs just go, you know, they are in-house and they're given to people that people know. But this one time, actually, they decided to just put a call out and see who there is out there. Greg Hadrick, who was my very first boss, decided to do that. He said, you know, let's just see what talent there is out there. So, you know, there were hundreds of entries and lucky me, landed the job. So, yeah, that's sort of where my career began.
Home and Away, well recognised here. I'm still on the telly here. I must admit, I'm more of the Neighbours era and Kylie and Jason era. But what was the what were the skills you learned there? I mean, you're pumping this stuff out, right? And you know, it's pretty real time, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. It's a factory. You know, you're really actually. I learned a lot working on Home and Away because you know you have to be fast, you have to be economical, and you still, like I said before, you have to try and find a way to do your best work within those constraints, within, you know, you're given your storyline, you're given your scenes, you're given the time each scene has to be, you know, the characters that are in your story, you know, and yet still you have to bring your best and you have to do it in a timely fashion. 2.5 hours of TV a week, you know, is no small feat. And then things would happen on the fly. You know, I was an editor on the show too. So sometimes, you know, a cast member would be sick for a week. They're just not showing up. So you have to write them out of every episode and you have to replace it with something else. So, you know, those are skills that I just don't think you can pick up anywhere else.
You didn't get to kill anyone off, do you? Who gets to decide that? That's the head honcho.
Yeah, yeah. Look, that's when contracts don't go to plan and, you know, the producer stomps down the corridor and says, okay, this guy's gone.
He might turn
off
up
with
in
his
the,
head.
Yeah, he might turn up in the shower a few decades later, which happened on Dallas. Still one of the worst plot twists in the history of soap writing. You also worked a lot on Bobby Ewing, Google it. You worked a lot on kids' TV shows. Blinky Bill, which is a cartoon about a koala, and Jim Henson's Bambaloo, which was a puppet show for preschool children. And again, was this just an opportunity that you spotted and went for, or did someone come calling for you?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of organic that way, the way it has all happened. Bambaloo was actually my very first children's TV gig. And, it was just somebody who'd worked with me on Home and Away who recommended me for that job. And, you know, you never say no to work as a writer. You kind of take anything that comes at you. But I was so glad that I did. I didn't know if I could do kids. I hadn't done kids. But turns out, you know, it was the happiest mental space for me as a writer, and I've just never wanted to leave ever since. You know, of course, I still write other things and I'll write whatever comes, but really my absolute first love is writing for children.
What makes them such a great audience?
You know, they are curious, they are not jaded, they are open, they are, you know, all of those things. They are the best people. Little people are the best people. You know, I just
they're
think
funny. They're funny and they love laughing.
They love laughing and they, you know, they go with you on any journey. And that's the thing, you know, they really are not jaded yet, you know. It's that openness that I find so beautiful about kids and kids' audiences. And sitting in an audience, for example, you know, in theatre, where you get the most immediate response from your, you know, from your listeners and your audience, your readers, is incredible feeling to have, you know, 500 kids all burst into laughter or kind of gasp at, you know, a tense moment, you know, some dialogue that you've written. There's just nothing like it. They are just so giving and generous.
Well, Sesame Workshop, you were selected to write Elmo's Tour of Australia. And when they go on tour, the Sesame Street characters, that's when we often get a new Indigenous character, right? A new character from wherever they've gone, which brings us back to Ollie, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know if they still do that, but I think they do. They have Sesame Street have characters in different countries that sort of teach the kids about the culture and the, lost for words at the moment. But anyway, yeah, they have local characters. Ollie is the Australian version of Sesame character for us, and so when Elmo was coming out to do some skits with Ollie, they asked me to write a few skits. So I got to write four sketches for them. It's not a great many, but still, writing four sketches for Sesame Street is was a career high at that time. So that was a wonderful experience.
Now, the David Walliams book's much known and loved here. He's incredibly popular. And how big a challenge to be adapting this work for the stage?
Oh, David's books are just a joy to adapt. There's just so much in them. They're so macabre. They're so funny. There's so many characters. They kind of write themselves, really. They've been really such a joy to adapt. And he's a very collaborative artist. He's not precious about his work. He lets me go off and, do my thing. And I will always send him the first draft of the play, and he'll give me notes. But he's really, very much a hands off while still being very supportive kind of an artist to work with. It's wonderful.
So these premiered in the Sydney Opera House at a time when what? It could be full of kids. What was the reaction?
To the David plays. Oh, they're full houses, every single one of them. I mean, really. Sell out seasons, not just at the Opera House, but really across the nation. They love him. They love his books. So, yeah, that's a joy. That's a great joy.
What were the constraints you were under here? You mentioned the sort of straitjacket when you're adapting and or working within a certain, constraint. What did you have to get right here?
Well, yeah, so the shows that I had to write, for example, they have to come in under 1 hour. They not even 61 minutes. We keep it under an hour. So, a book like Midnight Gang is a fat book, and so I had to really strip it back and think what is the main point here? What's the heart of the story? Some of the characters had to get the chop, so, and then you have five, I have five actors, so, budget constraints doesn't means you can't have 10 people on the road. It's about thinking, how do I double and triple some of these characters? These actors, so I have to come back as different characters. Which parts of the story are the most important to tell? How do I get through this whole thing in less than an hour? Again, allowing for applause, allowing for laughter, all of those things. So those are the things you have to, and it's retelling of a story because, and people come to see the story that they've read, but they also want to see something new. And that's the challenge, I think, in adapting, is that you have to bring your own flair to it because they don't want just the book. They want the book and then some. So yeah, that is the challenge in adapting books, but I love doing it.
One can hear the skills you learnt and, right from the start of that writing career, that there is a discipline to this, but also the questions you have to ask yourself, the problems you have to solve, they've served you well. Is there a freedom now, though, as you alluded to, in writing your own book for kids, and do you think you might be doing more of that?
Yes, well, I am doing more of that. I'm writing the next book as we speak. Yeah, there is certainly a freedom to it, but also within that freedom, I'm always thinking, is my audience, is my reader still with me? Every word, every page, every paragraph, I think, are they, have I got them? Are they still here? So yeah, that discipline continues, even though the freedom is greater.
Mariam, thank you. Mariam Master, and the book is Exit Through the Gift Shop.